Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is Johannes Kiebeck. Hey, Johannes.
Nice to be here.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Johannes is a program manager on the Bing Maps team, and we're going to talk about maps today. We could stand here and come up with all kinds of scenarios on why you would want to put maps into applications, whether they're consumer or commercial or personal apps, or whether it's running on the web, a tablet, a phone. But let's not do that. Let's just talk about how you add maps to your application using Bing Maps. We have an SDK, we have an API, it's pretty easy to do, so let's talk about that.
All right. So a very simple way to create your own maps, or maybe even just have a URL that guides you to a public website that has a location where you want to go, is using our consumer site. You can find a place, let's say, I'm looking here for the Microsoft Building 20. And this will find the location where we are. It will allow me to zoom in, switch into some more of the more exciting images, for example. And then I can share this out either via a URL here. And I can show you the full URL. There is a couple of parameters that we can actually put together that describe the zoom level, that describe the location that we have. And you can construct these URLs yourself and then basically direct to the Bing Maps consumer site.
Yeah, OK.
There's a very similar way how you can do that with our newest baby, the 3D application. If we have a quick look at that one, there's a preview that you find on Windows 8 and above. Mm-hmm. And that has some of the more exciting features in there. So if we switch quickly to the full screen, go into our aerial image mode, and then maybe we zoom in here a little bit closer and have a quick look. Maybe at the area where we are. Zoom out a little bit. You can see already I can tilt this now, and I have a full three-dimensional experience here, and I can assume every angle and look from every aspect, not just from the top down or the 490-degree steps that we had seen before.
There are no cars on 405. There's no traffic backup. What was this picture taken?
Isn't that magic, huh? Yeah.
There magic. Is, it's a dream world.
But the maps look a lot better that way.
Yeah,
and
those
they
are awesome.
Easier to read. And we can easier get away also from these privacy concerns that you could certainly have if you identify individual cars, if you identify individuals at places where you don't expect them.
Right.
This is the more cleaner way to represent the virtual world. And here, by the way, this is where my office is.
Ah, okay.
Right. But aside from that, we have hundreds of cities already in that mode, and we can also switch into something that really was captured from cars driving through the streets. So you see, if I can turn that around, there's a bubble. There's so much love to the detail that went in here. Even the bubble moves with me. And if I click into that, I'm now standing in front of the Brevon building in Bellevue.
Right.
Now,
cool.
That was a very quick one of the things that you can do with a future version of the API. There's things.
So just to be straight, we can right now do these basic maps. The stuff that you just showed us, the APIs are not public yet. Is that correct?
The 3D control that you saw there is in the store. But
okay.
The API around that is not yet. No.
Okay.
Now, what we can do today is applications like this one that you see, for example, in Power Map, which is a part of Excel.
Mm-hmm.
This uses also Bing Maps in the background, and it helps you to understand complex problems like the development of energy over a longer time frame in a more visual and narrative way. So if we look at this, there is a spreadsheet that has all this information.
Mm-hmm.
And there are very few people who look at such a spreadsheet and have immediate insights, right? So charts or maps can help you a lot. And if you look at the map, they give you some context for the location and how it might matter and how the Pacific Northwest might differ from the Florida region. So here in this particular case, We're looking at the utilities, and we have prepared something that is like an interactive tour. So it allows us to animate from one view to another, and we see now the capacity in megawatts that we have per county. And then we split this up into different types of energy sources. And if we fast forward a little bit in this presentation, we can drill down into the Pacific Northwest, into individual states that we have here. We see that it's very different from the color coding here in the south, where you see there is more natural gas rather than hydropowers that we have. And then if we want to look at that over the timeline, then you see here there is lots of data accumulated from the early 20th century, and we see that time scale now running through. Initially, it was all hydropower, and then it adds up with a more diverse resource spectrum that we have. Mm-hmm. And if we go one step further from that one, we can, of course, also do that aggregated by state. So here again, we see the same timeline running through. We see it started all with hydropower. Mm-hmm. Then we have more coal coming in, oil. Then we have here
is the coding for this, the thing you need to do as a developer, is this difficult to do?
Well, we'd always try to make it as simple as possible, mm-hmm. right? We try to take the complexity away and make the API as simple as possible.
Okay.
But this one is something where you don't even need to be a developer. The office team stood there and has worked on a solution that pulls the data out of the spreadsheet and makes it more declarative rather than a developer-driven approach.
Okay.
Now, in your session, of course, we want to satisfy the developers as well. So enough with spreadsheets, and let's go into where we find the resources.
Okay.
Microsoft.com/maps gives you an initial point in regards to, do you need to pay for the maps or not?
Yeah.
There is always a free entry level. Up to certain usage limits, you can use it for free on the web.
Okay.
To even higher usage limits, you can use it for free also on the devices, on the phone and on the Windows desktop. And if you exceed certain usage limits, then there is a license fee that would be applicable.
Okay.
Now, for the developers, we have more information here that gives you an introduction about the various APIs that we have available. There's mm-hmm. APIs and controls for Windows Store applications. There is one for the web, REST and SOAP services, and a spatial data service as well that allows us to do some more analytical work in the backend. And then we have still the Windows Presentation Foundation, mm-hmm. which is still one of our rock stars, currently being used, for example, on ESPN in the NFL shows.
So the store apps, is that does that also now include phone? So does that reflect the convergence of the APIs?
Good question. Not yet.
Okay.
The universal control is in work in progress,
okay.
but it's not there
yet. Coming relatively soon.
Right.
Cool. All right.
Yeah. And then you can, of course, find plenty of resources when you start Binging. If you search for the Bing Maps SDKs, you will find our MSDN resources first. You will find the blog that has almost weekly technical articles with code examples
Good.
On it.
Okay.
And another interesting source is, of course, also CodePlex. CodePlex.com. And when you search here for Bing Maps, very interesting part here are the modules that give you options to extend our core functionality that we have in the Bing Maps control to keep it lightweight,
okay.
With some more things like drawing tools, for example, parsing of various spatial data formats, and so on. There is heaps of features in there. Now, a very more hands-on approach is this interactive SDK. So this one has a couple of frequently used functions. How do you actually get started with a map, right? What is the first thing that you need to do? Mm-hmm. And it's literally one line of JavaScript code that you have here. If you want to understand everything that happens in the HTML document as well, you can click on this button and it will tell you, aha, there's the title, the typical header of an HTML document. Then we go here into the JavaScript function. That is the one line of code that you saw.
Okay.
And you can change the code in here, and it will accordingly also change the execution in that preview window that you see here.
And so at this point, the map shows up, and the map is full featured, right? It's got the ability to find your location, do the different views, zoom in, zoom out, because all of that is built into the map control, correct?
That's correct, yeah. Right. So you see already there is an automatic mode. Yeah. I can switch that to roadmaps. I can switch that to other modes as well.
Is there a way to programmatically switch? There must be, to switch
the views. Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Find my location. So you could make that all kind of happen automatically through code.
And you see in these menu items here, a lot of that is already prepared as an example. So what is most frequently asked is things like, can you switch the scale bar off? What is the map style selector? Can you switch that off, for example, if you don't want your users to play around with the style? If the importance is, for example, in the base map rather than in imagery, then maybe you don't want to do that. You can create the map with view options, for example, by setting a bounding box. You can do that in two different ways to define the view of the map. You can set a center point and a zoom level.
You typically see this with apps either on the web or on the mobile device where you go to a restaurant and you click get directions or find me. It shows you this type of thing where you're somewhere in there and then there's a defined box, as you call it, right?
Right.
That's the bounding box.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, this is the bounding box, and you see here we define that through a pair of coordinates. It's a rectangle, and each of the bounding points that we have in that rectangle has a latitude and a longitude.
Is there something that translates like mileage or yards into these funky numbers? Like, can I say, show me half a mile in either direction? or do I have to do the math?
You would have to do the math in that case, yeah. But that is an interesting question. I have not heard a request that basically says, show me half a mile of a map. Yeah. It's usually, I want to see all of Redmond, right?
Yeah.
Regardless if it is half a mile or 0.7.
Okay.
But let's have a look at how we actually start coding with that. Mm-hmm. So. Enough with interactive SDKs. Let's go in our Visual Studio and create a new project. And the idea that I have is I want to start off with a website, and then I want to show you how simple it can be to bring that on different types of devices.
Cool.
So not just on the Windows phone, but also on iOS devices and Android devices as well.
And then the API set, of course, is the same whether you're doing JavaScript or C# or VB, right?
Well, it's different, of course, right? VB is different from C#, and the namespace that you have in JavaScript is different as well. But the functionality is very, very much the same.
Right, but the basic API calls, the code you would use to create a map, right? The objects, the events, the arguments they take, relatively the same, right? Obviously, the code you write is different. But it's not like it's completely different, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I guess what I'm getting at is, if I go to the interactive and I look at the code that you write in JavaScript, it'd be pretty easy for me to figure out what code I need to write in C# or VB, right?
Yeah. But yes, it is. The classes are different ones, but there is still a Microsoft Maps object, for example,
right.
And there are events that allow you to figure out when you move the map and you want to execute certain actions whenever, for example, refresh the data that you have on the map.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's start with a new website. And let's call it C9. Completely blank project. And we create first a HTML document. Let's call it index. index.html. And in this index, I can, of course, start writing my code in line. But I want to have a separate file. And the reason why I want that is we also have a JavaScript IntelliSense helper for you that helps you with the code completion, very much like you know that from the higher programming languages like C#.
Cool.
So let's add a new item. And we take a JavaScript file. We call that index as well. And then I can get a nugget package. For our Bing Maps, come on. So there is our IntelliSense helper for the latest version of it. There is one for the previous version still around. And there is also TypeScript declarations and so on. This is actually one of the community efforts that our MVPs have been driving. We have a very, very loyal MVP base for our maps that we are really lucky to have, and, cool. and awesome partners as well. Mm-hmm. So here we have our index. As always, when we want to have the JavaScript IntelliSense helper in there, I just drag and drop that JavaScript file in there, and I have a reference, and I get the code completion and syntax highlighting as well. So first thing when we want to work here is we need to have the reference to the script. And rather than boring you with typing it down, I just drop it in here into the header. And I will also drop in our JavaScript file. There we go.
Okay.
And then we can start putting some objects in here. Let's say we want to have a div element first. And the div element that will host our map. And I know no inline style, but for the sake of brevity.
Yeah, we'll catch a slack on that.
OK, so now we have a full screen map. And there we go. So on the JavaScript side, we capture the event when the window loads. And let's say we call our function that we want to execute getMap. Function getMap. And then we start var map equals new. And here comes our Microsoft.maps.map. And here we need to see, first we need to have the div element in which we load the object.
Yep.
That is what the code completion tells us here. So we say document.getElementById. And this is our my map. And then I can have options that I pass in as an object. So credentials is the key that I need to have here. So coming back to that point where I mentioned the different resources that we have for Bing Maps, here is the developer resources that help you choose an API, to get an API, but also a link that gives you that guides you to our Bing Maps account center where you can create these keys for free. You need a Microsoft account.
Mm-hmm.
There's different types of keys that you can generate. There are those that expire after 90 days. That is more a thing of the terms of use. These developer keys never expire as long as you stay underneath these usage limits for the different types of applications that we have. I have this key already generated. I have it here. It's like a token that I pass in. And then there is more information that I can bring on top of that. That could be the center point of the map, for example. So if I say I want to have more information, like let's format that a little bit better. Center, that would be new Microsoft.maps.location. And then I need to have a latitude and longitude. Right? Okay. So two numbers, double type numbers. Let's take this location again that we have here. We are looking for the Microsoft Building 20. And if I want to go back into our roadmap, I take here the latitudes and longitudes that I lift directly from the website.
That's handy.
And then let's also define the zoom level so that we are fairly close. Zoom 17. There we go. I click now on Internet Explorer, and I just expect this to work.
This time. There we go.
Magically.
Okay.
All right.
So before we move on, I want to get back to this location thing. Let's say in a typical application, I know address, right? I've got the customer's address or whatever. But the API is expecting latitude and longitude. How do I go from street address to latitude, longitude?
Yeah, good question. So that process is something that we call geocoding. It takes a string and it translates that into this latitude and longitude.
Okay.
And we do have...
Because that's typically what's going to happen, right? If I have a fixed number of locations, I can look it up and hard code it into the code. But in all likelihood, right, I'm not going to know.
That's right.
So you enter a new customer, you enter the street address, and then I want the map to appear.
Right. And you want to be able to find the nearest Best Buy around your location.
And I also don't want to have to type latitude and longitude with six decimal places, basically.
Good point.
I'm lazy.
Well, but for that, we do have REST and SOAP web services for that, and we have wrapped that into a module that you can use to extend the core functionality of our AJAX control.
Okay.
And the way that works is we say after we have loaded the map, we load the module, and then we have a callback function that executes certain things when this additional JavaScript is downloaded.
Okay.
So in this case, I want to find a location by address, and you see I can provide more information that help us to bias the information.
Okay.
There's the string were, right? And we pass that into our call here, and we want to have potentially top five results back. We can bias this information because there are more than two Moscows in the world, right? There is like 10 Londons in the world.
Yes.
And if you want to make sure that the people in Texas get the Paris in Texas rather than the capital of France, then you can bias that through a number of things, like, for example, the user region that you are in, and you can provide a...
But if you enter a street address, right, one Microsoft Way, Redmond, Washington, there's really only one of those.
Let's do that right away. So we take away everything that is here about user data, which is anyway only for most of the logging purposes for yourself. And let's say we want to have the one Microsoft Way, Redmond, Washington.
It's interesting that it knows that's a typo. That's cool.
And
I think the Microsoft is misspelled too. Does that matter?
It does. Mild typos should not matter.
Okay.
No. So run this code, and it indeed gives us
there
the
one
Microsoft. There
we go. Perfect. Way. Okay. And then I don't have to know or even see or care about the latitude longitude.
That's right.
Perfect.
And the same happens also if you want to calculate directions. Right? Mm-hmm. So if we want to have directions from, let's say, we have here as one waypoint Seattle, the other waypoint is Tacoma, and you can overwrite what you want to have there appear in the title.
Right.
With a location that you have from a latitude and longitude. But you see, we do it in two different ways because there is two ways how you can do it.
Right.
The more natural way is to take the address string. So in this case, you see that you can even say, okay, maybe I want to have a detour via North Bend, right? You drag and drop that, and the controller will magically do that and set a waypoint in between.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also automatically populates This div element that we have here on the right-hand side was nicely formatted strings and the symbols that we have for driving directions.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Another interesting part of this AJAX control is perhaps the ability to look inside a shopping mall. So we have these what we call venue maps. And we can say, I want to have a look at the Bellevue Square Mall. And here we have all the shops that are in there. So I can mouse over that. It's interactive. Cool. I get the details about Macy's and phone number if I want to call up. So this is equally implemented.
And can you also on the venue map show where you are?
Well,
I mean, relatively speaking, right? Because it's only accurate to a certain accuracy, right?
Yeah. So you're probably referring to, let's say, you have a GPS location outside and you know exactly where you are in relation to the tour that you are making from your home to the office, for example. That is not really a mapping problem. It's more a sensor problem of the device that you carry with you.
So over time, as the sensors get more in the device, get more and more exact, right? I could create an app that says, you know, where are people? And we're all going to the Seahawks game, right? So we're all in the Clink, which holds 70,000 people, right? Or we're going to see a concert there, and I want to know where you are, right? Right now, your phone will tell you that you're basically somewhere in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
But if the sensor was really exact, it could show me kind of where on the seating map you are, right?
In a stadium, it will actually probably work, because unless the roof is closed, it will probably work.
All right.
If you are maybe in the basement of a shopping mall, it's more difficult, although the technology is advancing.
Yeah.
Bluetooth beacons, for example.
But it's really a hardware issue. It's not something that the SDK can help you with at this
point.
Not the
SDK, no.
Right, okay.
This is another option that we had for the venue maps. Another module that we have here also. So there is a lot of magic that happens behind the scene that we don't want to put as a permanent ballast in our control if you just want to look where the map is, right?
Okay.
So we put that into a separate piece of code that we load on demand. There is another part of that that we call the Bing Spatial Data Services. And these spatial data services allow you to take all your data and host them in our data centers and then query them by proximity or in other fancy ways. For example, find me in which school district I am. And now find all the schools in that district, but only those in the district and not those that might be in the neighboring school district as well. I really want to have it clearly defined, the spatial query that I can execute in our data centers. You will see that we have some of those things here. I execute a call that is basically a REST web service call that we have here, and it goes to a data source and gives us now the false coffee shops back. And then I get JSON objects that I can easily drop in my AJAX control as well. Now I want to build on that particular part and take that a little bit further. Let's have a look at an application that I prepared. Took me less than half a day. And let's take this one. So here we have a website and similar project as we started before. I have a couple of more scripts that I have in there. Most of those are just for the menu bars that we have. And then there is one that interprets data in a particular format that we call well-known text. It's an official industry standard, how you describe a polygon with a sequence of strings. This helps us to take this format and pass it more easily in our maps. And then you see a couple of images that I have in there. That's basically all styled. So the code that really matters here is this index and the JavaScript that we have here and the document, which has a few scripts. So let's have a look at what it will actually do. So the super typhoon, the next one, is approaching Japan, as you may have heard in the news.
So this is the next one, not the one that was just there this past weekend? There's a new one coming?
There's a new one coming, yeah, okay. And this is the position as of this morning.
Got it.
So we see in this particular case spatial data that are uploaded into our spatial data services and that show the location of the center of the storm right here. Mm-hmm. Then we have the track where it has been, where it is likely to go, and then we have the error margin that it potentially could take when it drifts to the left or to the right. So on top of that, I have also here a couple of satellite images that were provided by NASA and by NOAA, and they show us the eye of the storm. Come on.
Take a little while to download on our lightning fast internet here.
This works quicker on my phone. So something not right here. Let's reload the page. You see something is not right. Let's take the typhoon track, let's take the satellite images, and then
oh,
we
there
see
we go.
Here.
Okay.
This is an infrared image,
nice.
And I have equally one that is the natural light and the natural interpretation of the visible spectrum that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have is spatial data that are uploaded into the spatial data services, and I have a tiled source that basically follows the very same naming convention that we use in Bing Maps ourselves to have billions of tiles that cover the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
So by just following the same naming convention, I can tell our map control where on this map relative to the upper left and lower right corner of the world map, it should actually put these little tiles, all 256 by 256 pixels. And this all started, if we look at the tiles first, because that is that simple, with a couple of GIFs or PNG files that I found on the NOAA website. So we have a tool that we call the Map Cruncher. And this tool is a very simple workbench, comes out of Microsoft Research.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows you to manually geo-reference an image. So here you see these GIFs, they had coordinates with them. Sometimes geospatial data also have in the metadata this information that describe them. So there could be, what is the upper left and lower right corner of that image? What are those coordinates? And we can extract those too.
Okay.
But in this particular case, we see, let's zoom out a little bit. This is 137 degrees to the east. And here we have in the top right corner, 25 degrees of latitude. So I basically move with a very fine control, take the control key down and the cursor key, then I can move in very small steps this photo here. And I can either identify, if it is a better scale, a corresponding point in the map, mm-hmm. if it may be an aerial image from, you know, your backyard or so, then I may be able to identify these sort of things. Or I can just enter the latitudes and longitudes here in that virtual Earth position. Now, once I have three or four points, I can lock that view. And that means I rewarp that image and I transform it in something and overlay it virtually over this map. Then I can say, render this now. And I define where I want to have it in. And then it will start producing tiles.
Oh.
All these tiles okay. look now like little 256 by 256 images. And there's the pyramid with various levels of detail that we have in there. And then I took a tool, uploaded that to the Windows Azure Blob Storage that we have. And from there, I can generate these URLs to retrieve these tiles and overlay it on our map. In this case, you will see at the very bottom, there is my storage account. And then I have a subfolder, a container, there are tiles. And then here I have a placeholder for the quad key. The quad key is a sequence of digits 0, 1, 2, 3 that describes where in the world this tile belongs.
Okay.
This is all that it takes, right? So to get cool. these tiles and overlay it on the map, four lines of code. Now, the other part is slightly more, where I basically download the data from the Bing Spatial Data Service. I pre-uploaded this data from the KML format. It's very well known in the geodata world. Another one that we support here is also the SB shape files. And then, of course, the typical CSV and XML files also that you expect as well. Now, in this case, I'm loading an additional module. And this module here, this advanced shape module, for the data that I have here, I would not even have needed it. But it allows me to do fancy things in JavaScript that are not normally natural. For example, you have a polygon with a hole in there. Or you want to describe an object as a collection of polygons that belong together. Maybe the island group of Indonesia, right? Okay. That would be one object, and we described it as a multi-polygon. And this module can deal with that sort of construct. If I want to switch on this data source, then I can basically, this is all not required, I define a base UL, the data source ID, then the data source name that is very similar to a table name in a database. And then you have what type of information you are querying, in this case, the entity name that we have. Mm-hmm. So those were the parts of the data source that helped me identify this particular table that I have there. And now when I query that, I say, I want to find this information in a particular bounding rectangle, bounding box that I describe through a set of coordinates. Okay. And these set of coordinates I have provided here statically, but you see I can also do that dynamically. I can say, give me everything that is in the currently visible area of the map. So I basically define what is that visible area, and then I take this northwest and southeast corner and I can put this in instead of some pre-prepared information that I have here. Now, in that particular case, I really don't want to query the data to query the database all the time again, because there is only 47 objects that I have, and I can as well load that in one go.
Yeah.
So we have some paging in here as well, and then there is a JSON format that I want to have returned. And when I have the data, I execute a callback function that drops it to my map. So this callback function looks into that JSON object, and it loops through it and defines me each of these objects. There are points in there are line strings in there are polygons in there, and for each of those, I have a separate rule of style that I want to apply. For the pins, for example, I want to have a very particular image. For the polygons that I have in there, I want to have no fill color. So I basically say stroke color is 100% alpha value that we have here. Then we have white defined for the line string. And then if we look at the polygon option here, we have no fill. And the stroke color in this case is 50%, more or less. And then it's completely red.
Okay.
Right. So that's ARGB values that we have in there. So fairly straightforward that definition. Now and then there's a couple of other things in basically to clear the map and so on. But that is a minimal amount of code. The whole thing that you saw there is a total of 130 lines of code,
right?
Including blank lines that we have in there.
Cool.
Now, what does it take to bring the same thing now to iOS and Android and the Windows Phone? Mm-hmm. Not much. So we can basically reuse everything. There is, for years now, a technology that is initially started as PhoneGap, then it became more prominent as Apache Cordova.
Yep.
And we adopted it as the multi-device hybrid apps. Basically, the Apache Cordova framework that we make that simple to use in the context of Visual Studio.
Right.
Rather than fiddling around with all these tools, I saw the show that you had here a couple of weeks ago or so about that topic. That was awesome. So looking into that particular part, we just create a new project, a multi-device hybrid app. I remember the tip, no blanks in the folder name that was in there. Then you basically create that structure. I have pre-prepared that already so that we don't have to do all the copy and paste stuff in there. But the code is, with two exceptions, exactly the same. So here's the callover part.
And you're going to put all these samples up on MSDN code samples, right? And we'll link to those from the show description.
I will put that all on MSDN, yes.
Sweet.
Okay, let's look into our Solution Explorer. Here's our project. We have the style sheets in here. That is the folder structure that you expect from the multi-device hybrid app. It is not entirely the same as in Cordova and PhoneGap. Mm-hmm. But there is plugins that you can use there as well. For example, if you wanted to do things like push notification with the Windows Azure Mobile Services, that gives you an update and brings it to your screen whenever you have the newest data for the position of the typhoon, right? Or the latest satellite images are there. Then you could push that out as a push notification to all the users of the application. The images, that is why I also chose the folder names like that and the file names like that, are one of these folders where all the icons go. Scripts is where the JavaScript is in. Mm-hmm. So you see there is already my Bootstrap in there for the menus. There is a platform override if I wanted to do something very specific for Android or iOS, for example, a different style if I wanted to apply that. There is my module for the parsing of the well-known text. And then there is my index here as well. That is pretty much it.
And so this code is exactly the same, mostly the same?
Mostly. So the code is pretty much the same. The structure of the HTML document is slightly different. So while you might be tempted to put the scripts on top in the header in a normal web document, in this particular case, we put them at the bottom of it. So we execute the header first, and then we have the scripts at the very bottom of that. There's an extra script in here for Cordova and another one for the platform overrides.
But the API calls are the same?
The API calls are pretty much the
same.
The only thing is we don't have a window on load event here, but we have a device ready event on a mobile phone. And we basically tap on this one when the device is ready. After that happened, we load the map, and then we do all the rest the same.
Okay.
So the only thing is the hooked, the entry point for executing the initial code.
Cool.
Let's have a quick look at some of the ways how we can demonstrate that. Very simple way is to use the emulators that we have. Let's take an Android emulator. And there is Ripple in here. That is an emulator that runs in Chrome. I ignore you. And then let's take the Typhoon track. Here he comes. And I can take the same also from the images. And this is not something that only works on my local machine. I actually did this already and prepared it and loaded it on both the Android device here.
Show that. So this is an Android device.
It is an Android device, a Nexus 5 in this particular
Nexus
case.
5, okay.
And we also have it on the old iPad 2. This is a slightly different version, but the same concept of application.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
Yeah, that was a very quick run. So I will put all the code up there. One resource that I forgot to mention and I need to bring up is our blog. I think I touched on it briefly, but we have blog posts pretty much every week. So if you search for the Bing Maps blog, you will find technical posts most of the time, autocomplete function that you can bring in here, animations that you might want to have if you are looking into WPF applications and you want to have the maps bouncing around or transition it very smooth along a marathon or something like that you want to follow on the map. these sort of things. That were just two of the most recent ones. But we also publish here whenever we have new imagery, when we update our data, when we have new cities in 3D and so on.
Okay, cool. So easy to get started. We touched on the fact that you can always start for free. If you exceed certain limits, then there's a license required. We touched on great ways to learn more. You showed us a lot of JavaScript code. Is there equivalent code for C# VB guys?
Yes.
So where would you find that?
We have...
you get the gist of what's going on with the JavaScript code, but what if I want to write C# or VB?
Right. So Bing Maps SDKs are your friend. We have C# and VB.NET for the Windows Store applications. Of course, you can use both in our SOAP web services that we have. The WPF control supports also... C#.
So you could go to that interactive page, see the types of things you can do, look at the JavaScript code, get a sense of what's going on, and then head over to the documentation for the actual code you'd write.
Yep.
Perfect.
That could be a good approach.
All right. Sweet. Thanks so much for showing us this. That was very cool.
Thanks for your time.
Hope you enjoyed that. Good stuff to play with. Check it out. Let us know what you thought, and we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.